shall fight in the field and in the street.
You are resistance. Aaron Show.
You done messed up, Aaron!
They have this underwear that they, I think, okay. Magical.
Okay, hold on just a second. Okay. Yeah. Hey guys, welcome to this.
They have this underwear that they think is magical.
Hey,
I'm sorry. I'm just.
Hey. Welcome to this episode of the Aaron Show.
Just start over.
No, ready? I'm including all of that now.
I'll be the director. All right. Well, welcome to this low production, cheap podcast. All right. Okay, ready to go? Let's go. I'm ready now.
Yeah. We've been going. This is all going in.
Oh, good.
This is all going in, Jonathan. Okay, so this is a friend from seminary, Jonathan Pruitt, and you are currently doing what?
I'm currently finishing up my PhD at Liberty University.
At Liberty University?
Liberty University, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And what's your dissertation?
It is going to be an inductive argument moral argument for Christianity specifically. So Christianity is the best explanation of certain moral facts.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. So that's in a sentence.
Cool.
That's all I've got so far. So.
But isn't Jesus like a homophobe?
No, that's not true, actually.
That's not true?
No, but it's not true.
The Huffington Post says he is.
you know what's weird is a couple of things. Number one, now that we're actually in podcast mode, I feel weird. This happened to me when I did a podcast. I always felt more strange. But anyway, stranger. But the so homophobe, you're calling somebody homophobe most of the time in our culture, as you know, I'm sure, and as a connoisseur of popular culture and of words, it's just meant to scare people away and to shut people down. And yeah. You know, people might say Jesus is a homophobe first off, I don't know how they could say that, because they also say they never said anything about homosexuality. of course, he isn't, because he's not afraid of gay people. He loves gay people. You know, he might think that marriage is between a man and a woman. And that's why
he might think that.
He might have something in the Gospels that says explicitly that, but...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, we went all the way from, like maybe he's a homophobe... to maybe what he said is what he said in the Gospels.
Yes.
So, man.
Well, I'm just trying to be diplomatic here. Be modest about my claims.
Well, you're doing a terrible job at being diplomatic. So.
Yeah, well, I'm probably going to be called homophobe now. So.
Yeah, well, I've always thought of you that way.
Thank you.
So just to now that we are in podcast mode, so the only thing that we really don't do on the show is curse, and it's not like we couldn't edit it out, but if you edit it out, you still have to like say that it is explicit but edited on Feed Burner or whatever. So I'd rather not do that. Other than that, you can basically say whatever you want.
Well, there goes half of my vocabulary. I don't know how I can. All right, well, I'll try. Go ahead.
But anyway, I think you were a little weirded out because I was being all jokey, and that's the way we do things sometimes. It depends.
You're the one that curses, not me. I don't really do that.
You don't curse?
Well, I do when no one's around. But don't tell my wife. Wait.
So just when you're, like, praying?
No, like when I, you know, one thing, I play video games, so, you know, when I'm in my in my house and I get sniped by somebody, well, then I might drop a curse bomb, an S bomb or something. But I try not to do anything around other people.
Okay, so that's not
really what I'm saying is, what I'm saying is I'm better than you. That's what the message I want you to hear. So
yeah, sure. I know. You text me that every other day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like one. I'm serious, guys. It's like one text. He just says like I'm better than you. I'm just reminding you. It's okay. I know Jonathan needs to believe that. Anyway, so I wanted to talk to you about Mormonism because you know a lot about Mormonism. And I was listen to Ben Shapiro pretty much every day, except now he's on some like Jew holiday for the next week and a half. They're celebrating like, I don't know, like forgiveness or something. Anyway, so he does like a section called Things I Hate, Things I Like and Things I Hate, and the Things I Hate section from like, I don't know, 4 days ago or something. He said he hates the musical, The Book of Mormon. Mm. And have you seen The Book of Mormon?
I've seen a Book of Mormon, but not the play.
Okay, so you haven't seen the South Park guys play.
No, I haven't. I heard it's good though. I mean, I'd like to see it, but I don't know anything about it other than it's kind of a hit. It's by South Park guys and
yeah.
Really, I know that some Mormons actually like it, but
yeah, well, and that's funny because when Ben mentioned it, he said, "This is the difference between like leftists and religious people." Is when it came out, I think this is really more like the difference between evangelicals and Mormons. When it came out, a lot of Mormons weren't upset or angry. They were like, well, this just gives us more opportunities to talk about
what is the in the little pamphlets they give out. There's a fancy name for that, but I don't know what it is.
Proselytizing?
Yeah, they put ads in the, you know, if you were at church, you'd call them the, what is it they call, what is that thing they give it to you when you go into church? The little pamphlet?
Literature?
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, they advertise.
Mean all of those little, their little brochures and things like that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Like, it has a name. Why can't I think of the name? But
is it specifically a Mormon name?
No. If you go to a Baptist church, and maybe it's different out there in California. I don't know if you guys go to church out there.
I actually don't right now.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
well,
we stopped going a couple years ago because we realized we were like in an abusive situation. And anyway, so I took your joke and I made it serious.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Joke.
You're always bringing it down. But anyway, my point
you
is
are
this,
better
that
than me.
The Salt Lake Church actually put ads in the literature that they passed out for the Book of Mormon play. They actually thought, like you said, they thought of it as a chance to advertise to get the message out.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. So in his little Things I Hate, he mentioned this one of these songs in the show called, I think it's either I Believe or it's I Just Believe. And it's like the first two lines are like, I believe that God created the universe. It's like two things. It's like two things that are like very normal for Christians to believe. And then the third line is, I believe that Jews built boats and crossed the Pacific Ocean and lived in North America. That's almost exactly like the third line. Uh-huh. And that's when you laugh. Because it's like the first two lines or whatever, and then it's like, whoa, where'd that come from?
Right. Yeah, well, that is one of the more unique views of Mormonism. You know, mm-hmm. I think it was, oh, gosh. I don't remember. See, I don't remember the details here. But, yeah, they believe that the ancient Jews, like, I think it was about 500 B.C. or maybe a little bit before then. Yeah, they built little canoes with the roofs on them and came over here. And so that the Native Americans at least have some. So it's debatable. What kind of relation the Jews had with the Native Americans among the Mormons. But, you know, the traditional view was that the Native Americans are Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Anyway, you can edit that out.
Well, I think Terrell Givens' position is that if you actually look at all the geography in the Book of Mormon, it doesn't require anything bigger than like the state of Oregon to have taken place in.
Right.
So that's the way that some of the like, because Terrell Givens is like a pretty legitimate scholar. I mean, he's kind of a big deal.
One point on that is that if you can check this out on YouTube, there's some really great, it's really interesting to watch Mormon apologetics and how they do it. But there's two camps. There's this camp, you might call them like the minimalist camp, that you mm-hmm. know would say something like Terrell Givens says, and this would be guys like David Peterson, which if you know anything about Mormon apologetics, and then you know who Dave Peterson is. But then they want to say, well, look, you know, what does the Book of Mormon actually say, and what does it actually require? But there's another camp of Mormon thinkers and apologists who rely more on traditional views of the Book of Mormon and what it says. And maybe you might even say more on what Joseph Smith has said in the tradition of Mormonism. And Joseph Smith seemed to think, of course, all of this is debated, you know, hotly debated, but Joseph Smith, you know, there's a lot of statements by him that seem to suggest, like, for example, that the events of the Book of Mormon took place across North America. And minimalists want to say that it took place in South or Central America somewhere.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it's just an interesting little diversion, you know, disagreement among Mormon apologetics.
That's interesting. Well, and the thing that necessitates the disagreement on some level is that there really is no evidence for this claim at all. Right?
Well, yeah. There is. So, again, I think if you asked the Mormon apologists, they wouldn't agree with that. But
well, I know that, but yeah.
Yeah. It's you know, there's not been anything found that, and so for here's just an example. So one of the things that if you go on the internet and you visit some of these ex-Mormon message boards, like ex-Mormon on Reddit, which is a very, I still go there all the time to see what's going on with the ex-Mormon crowd. But one of the things they constantly bring up is that the Book of Mormon mentions horses. And, of course, what the scientists tell us is that horses weren't in America until after the Europeans came. So then some of the Mormon apologists have said that when it's talking about horses, that's just a gloss for an animal like a tapir, which, you know, if you know what a tapir is, it doesn't look anything like a horse. You couldn't ride it. No, it isn't. It's just a little, looks like a big groundhog.
Yeah, but that is kind of what they look like.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so you want to talk about epistemology of Mormonism. That's what you're driving to, I think, right?
Well, and there were horses here, but it was like, it was a long time before, they were extinct a long time before the exile. So it doesn't fit up with the...
I got a correction. It's Daniel Peterson, by the way. Sorry. Not David Peterson, I mentioned earlier.
That's disconcerting because you said anyone who knows anything about Mormon apologetics knows who David Peterson is.
Yeah. It's Daniel Peterson.
And you didn't even know his name.
Well, I knew his last name. I mean, you know, that's the important part.
Yeah, but like that could be any Scandinavian dude. Anyway.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, Jonathan did sound really smart for like a minute there.
Yeah.
But
if you get to know me, you'll know that I'm not as smart as I sound. And I don't tell it. So.
Okay, so that's all. Yeah, I mean that's all good info. That's the kind of stuff that I called you for. So my thing, I did a podcast. I did like an hour and a half podcast by myself. Mm. After listening to the Ben Shapiro.
Well, no one's going to listen to that.
Yeah, hopefully not, because at one point I actually cried.
Oh, wow.
But, well, because I had just, you read that piece I wrote on suffering, right?
Yeah, I did.
So
that's what it was about, Las Vegas and suffering.
The podcast?
I mean, the podcast.
No, the podcast was literally just on, like, this one comment Ben Shapiro made. But at some point, and I don't remember why, and this is why it's kind of dangerous to do podcasts by yourself if they're not, like, written out, you know? Because
yeah.
I only thought it was going to be, like, 20, 30 minutes max. But somehow I got on the Book of Job. And because I just had been working on this thing, it was all really fresh. And I actually started crying at one point. There's like a 20-second sort of break, which I could have edited out, but it sounded so weird because I get choked up. And then anyway, so hopefully no one listens to it. But the thing that I think is interesting. What?
You crying. I'm going to make you crying in my ringtone. Just so that I can hear it whenever anyone calls, which is never, but I'm sorry I keep interrupting.
That sounds exactly like the kind, you know what? I'm going to record something for you.
Oh, good.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
So, I think it's kind of funny that, so Ben's whole thing was like, this is just anti-religious nonsense. And he's, like, about to go on the Sam Harris podcast because he keeps saying, because I think Sam's a smart guy. The more I learn about, like, Sam Harris, the less I respect him intellectually. Like, I'm almost done with this one audiobook called Free that goes through pretty much all of the science that he tries to use to show that there's no such thing as free will. And it's just junk. I mean, it's not even just junk, but like his free will book is just trash. Anyway, he's saying like this is just anti-religious, and I don't actually think it is anti-religious. I think it's anti-Mormon because you've seen the South Park episode, right?
Yes, Sam.
And like the Scientology episode, have you seen that one?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are the only two episodes they've done like that. Is, you know, basically a pretty straightforward explanation of certain beliefs about two of the weirder, quote-unquote, I'm not equating Scientology with Mormonism because I think that there are pretty massive differences between the two, but they are two of the weirder, quote-unquote, religions in North America. I think they're easy to make fun of. And it's not because, like, we're so normalized as Christians. It's because Ben was like, all religions make religious claims or miraculous claims. Right. I'm like, yeah, I think most of them do. Scientology actually doesn't really claim miraculous claims. I don't think. They claim weird claims.
Well, they claim, it depends on, they claim that you can, like, heal your body with the power of thought.
But I don't think that they would say that that's miraculous.
Yeah, well, but I mean, it depends on, like, your point of view, I guess, because it would certainly be supernatural, given the current, perspective on what naturalism entails.
I guess, I don't know. To me, that doesn't really, because that has a pretty straightforward explanation. Like, your body, like, mental health is connected to the, actually, I don't really know how that works for them. That, to me, that almost sounds like Christian Science or something. But
yeah, that's one of the problems with, Scientology is that it's kind of, you couldn't go to a Scientologist and ask them, what is it, what do you believe specifically? It's kind of usually evasive. At least,
yeah.
What I've seen.
Mormons are not evasive. Mormons will tell you that pretty much exactly what they believe.
That's an interesting point. So, I mean, I think that you may see, there's a couple things I want to bring out. Is one is they are less evasive now than they were even 5 years ago. And I'm talking here, so you can think about Mormonism on two different levels. You can think about the Salt Lake Church, which is who we think of when we think of Mormons. But of course, just as to point this out, there are a number of Mormon groups around that are not associated with Salt Lake Church, and they have what appears to me, at least as an outsider, equally strong claims to be the Church of Joseph Smith, the truth that Joseph Smith established. But you can think of Mormonism as the official church. This is, Mormonism is what the Salt Lake Church says. And then you can think of it as Mormonism is, what the practitioners, that's what they say it is. And, in the past few years, for example, when I was living in California, I had some Mormon missionaries living in my apartment complex. And they came over, and I talked to them for, six months or so. And one of the guys didn't even know that Joseph Smith was a polygamist. The Salt Lake Church, and I said, it's getting better at this, but it's because of there's been certain pressures that have caused them to do this. But they have not been entirely forthcoming about some of the issues with facts about the history. And one other example, just real quick off the top of my head, is there's how they represent Joseph Smith in the translation of the Book of Mormon. It's pretty clear in the documentation that Joseph Smith translated the Book of Mormon by putting a seer stone into a hat and, reading he would, see the words in the hat and then somebody else would record it. But, the traditional picture of Joseph Smith translating is of him sitting down with the golden plates, translating as any normal translation would work, running his finger over the words and doing it like that. And the Salt Lake Church has, they know this. I mean, it's in their history, but they have misrepresented it. And they have gotten better at this, to give some credit. And it's been recently. Mormons don't.
Hold on one second. So, all the pieces we have historically use the seer stones and the hat thing, right?
Yeah. Well, all the if you look at the sources, from what Joseph Smith said and the actual historical documentation, it is. He translated by putting a stone in a hat.
Right.
But if you were to go to...
That's in the South Park episode, right?
Yeah, I believe it is.
So what you're saying is that that's not... So, like, would... Okay, see, I didn't... That's always the way that I've been... In fact, Terrell Givens kind of makes a point in some of his writings about the miraculous nature of that. Like... He almost treats it sort of like resurrection appearances of Jesus kind of a thing. Like he attests to the eyewitnesses and multiple sources explaining this is how it happened. It sounds like what you just said, though, is that they've kind of been either embarrassed about that or sort of traditionally, or they just kind of kept it. It just wasn't something they brought up, like they or they've misrepresented it.
Yeah, I mean, I have this. There's this famous picture of Joseph Smith translating, and maybe we can find it and link it on your website. But
okay,
it's been used in. It's not like church has used it in media and stuff like that. And it doesn't depict that at all. And the common, like you know, the, I just go off of in terms of what people actually believe. I'm just going off. The contact I've had with, maybe a dozen or so Mormons, they didn't know about this. They don't. The Salt Lake Church didn't tell them that Joseph Smith translated with a stone in his hat. And if you look, if you look at some of these ex-Mormon messages explaining why it is that they leave the Mormon Church, one of them is because it's just because of. They felt that it could have been misled, that the church has misrepresented their history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they if they know that Joseph Smith is polygamous, then the Salt Lake Church might lead them to believe that he didn't have as many wives as he did,
mm-hmm.
or that they would under different circumstances, that kind of thing.
So the thing that I was trying to get at, and I was hoping you would be able to confirm, is that I've seen this from lots of people. Like I think I've even heard Sam Harris, like people like that, bring up this point. They'll say things like, if you accept the miracles of the foundation of Christianity, then you also have to accept, you know, the miraculous claims of Mormonism. And I think that the miraculous claims that the, and some Christians, I've seen various responses to this kind of thing. I feel like a lot of Christians will try to discredit some of the miracles in Mormonism. But my feeling has always been that I kind of don't care because the miracles can have multiple sources. Like, you don't right. just have to, miracles can be worked by other things besides God.
Well, let's just put it this way. Let's just say for the sake of the argument, right, that Joseph Smith did translate the Book of Mormon. It wouldn't follow from that. In fact, just as a note, too, if you read the Book of Mormon, what it actually says, it's not really contradictory to what the Bible says. But what contradicts the Bible is with later developments that Joseph Smith and Brigham Young introduced. But the point is that, let's just say for the sake of the argument, he really did have golden plates, he really did translate them. That it doesn't follow from that the Salt Lake City Church is the Church of Jesus Christ. Those things aren't connected. In the way that, for example, well, if Jesus Christ is raised from the dead, that would mean that what he said was true. There's not a tight connection.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I do think, though, that while there isn't, when I was talking about this by myself on that podcast episode, I kind of said the opposite of what you just said. I feel like the Book of Mormon in its theology actually does contradict, the scriptures, but
yeah.
I guess on like actual historical points, it doesn't. But where it does, I think, come into pretty deep problems is the fact that in like 3rd Nephi is not a work from the first century. It's Jesus is not Jewish in 3rd Nephi. He's a Protestant. Like, I mean, that's literally what happens is when he shows up in 3rd Nephi, when he shows up for like the 1.5 or 2 days or whatever it is, 3 days, I don't know. when he shows up for those days, basically all he does is settle inter-Christian debates.
Right.
like, that's pretty much what he does. Like, he tells them, like, this is how you baptize, and this is how you celebrate the Lord's Supper, and this is how you do this. And it's like, these are supposed to be Native American Jews removed, like, 500 years from the Holy Land, right? So why do they care about any of this? And it's so obvious that it's written for Joseph Smith's own questions, because those were the questions he had. He wanted to know which form of religion, you know, form of Christian religion, was true. And very conveniently, 2,000 years ago, Jesus answered all his questions. And that seems very stupid. Like, it goes beyond just like, I think this is false. This is just dumb at this point. Not that Mormons are morons. They're smart people, but this, I feel like you get into a place where you can be ridiculed fairly for things like this. Yeah, I mean, you're welcome to disagree with that, but.
This is one of to us standing outside of Mormonism, and to most people, it seems, almost absurd to think it could be true. And there's a whole list of issues, you know. I mean, I think to me the number one problem is with the Book of Abraham, which I don't know if you know about that, some of the issues there.
But, no, tell the world about them.
All right. Well, I'll be as brief as I can here. So Joseph Smith, this is after the church is founded, encountered a traveling salesman who was selling artifacts from Egypt.
Oh, I remember you telling me about this. This is good. Yeah.
And so he raised the money to buy a couple of scrolls that the guy had, and he claimed that these were scrolls that Abraham himself actually wrote. Now, again, I mean, all these points are contentious, and people will even debate whether Joseph Smith claimed that or that's what he meant, that it was actually, I mean, it's just to be clear, it seems like Joseph Smith is saying that Abraham, in fact, if you read the first verse of the Book of Abraham, I think it says, the Book of Abraham, written by Abraham with his own hand, that Abraham physically wrote on these scrolls. Joseph Smith got them from this traveling salesman. And anyway, so the what's happened now is, of course, people can read these scrolls, and they can see what they say, and what the scrolls say has nothing at all to do with the text of the Book of Abraham, which Joseph Smith claimed he was translating from the scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, just to clarify.
So
yes.
We still have these scrolls that he bought.
That's so. Again, so every single point of this is contentious, but it seems like we have the scrolls that he used to translate from. We have a book of where he seemed to. He tried to write in Egyptian grammar, where he was trying to translate. You can match up what we have now with what he was with his Egyptian grammar. I mean, and really, you can, if you have a Book of Mormon and you have the there's pictures in there of the first or of the supposed Book of Abraham. Now, if you look at that picture, if you're an Egyptologist, you're going to say, oh, well, that's just the Egyptian Book of the Dead. We know what that is. We know what it says.
It is just pages from the Egyptian Book of the Dead?
Right, yeah.
That's all it is?
It's a common funerary text. And, of course, so the Mormon apologists have a couple of answers to this. One is that they say, well, look, we actually don't have the text just translated from. It was lost. And there is some, the scrolls themselves weren't, we survived a fire, and they think, well, maybe they were lost along the way to their where we have them now. But the other response is to say, well, Joseph Smith was never like actually translating these. They were like an inspiration to him to get revelation, which he wrote down.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it seems like, you know, Joseph Smith's central proof of him being a prophet of God is that he who was a seer revelator, right? Mm-hmm. And we have this one golden opportunity in our current time to check on this claim. And it turns out that it doesn't, you know, it falls on its face. It doesn't, you know, totally has nothing to do with what Smith said. But
there's a sense in which, oh, sorry, what was your point?
No, well, my point is this, that, so this is one of the things that, you know, I was extremely fascinated with Mormonism for like 2 or 3 years. I mean, spent all my free time listening to podcasts and reading books on Mormonism and met with Mormons. But this thing about, how could someone believe something that seems so obviously false to me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think maybe we can get to that a little bit more. But what were you going to say?
Well, that's the thing. Because, like, I mean, people believe all kinds of stuff. But there's a sense in which Mormons are very comfortable with not just weird beliefs, but it's sort of like okay, the main meat. This is what was so weird when I actually went with missionaries to their services. For all I know, we met with the same guys because for a while they were pestering me. Well, not really pestering. I actually really like Mormons, and I feel bad for them because, you know, when they're on their mission, they have like nothing basically. And I mean, they get fed every night by some family, but aside from that, they don't have much going on. They kind of walk everywhere, and it's Southern California, so it's really hot. So the main thing I do is I ask them if they want any water, which, you know, they almost always do. But and then I say, well, why don't you ask your God to provide it for you? No, I'm kidding.
Mount Carmel situation.
What?
I said it's a Mount Carmel situation.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if you read the Old Testament, but there is a story about Elijah there.
Yeah, you know what? I mentioned that story in my Federalist article. So,
oh, good.
There's actual documentation. Yeah, I knew you were a liar. Anyway, the kind of climax of my time with this particular group of missionaries was, I don't think I ever told you about this, but my friend Kyle Hendricks was over here one night when five of them came over, and it was two guys and three girls, and I had not met any of the girls, and I think two of the guys were basically being asked to leave because they had been asking questions, and so they sent in one of their local big guns, I guess. To sort of like lead this. What?
Same thing happened to me. Go ahead.
How many were there when they did this with you?
Oh, they didn't do that. Well, they did bring in a guy, you know, the big hitter elder to come in, and you know, he was like, "Why are you bugging these guys?" You know. But anyway, sorry, I like to talk, like to myself talk, you know how that is.
Okay, it was so weird too, because it's this like very suburban white girl sort of leading everything, and then she has two Polynesian ladies with her, and then two, you know, very straight laced hometown, you know, Mormon guys. So the conversation is basically me and Kyle, who are both studying philosophy in grad school, and this woman, and she really can't say anything. All she can really keep doing is giving us the face thing. And any reason that I would give, I would say, yeah, but look, if I give you a reason or an evidence, and you can't give me anything, then who is right and who is wrong here? And she's like, well, yeah, you have a reason and we have faith. And I was like, well, there you go. And the main meat of a Mormon service, really is sort of this reassuring each other constantly that they believe. Like,
yeah.
the testimony time, right? They basically just say over and over again, I believe, and it almost always focuses on Joseph Smith. I believe that that Joseph Smith actually did this. And that was really creepy to me because I was like, because they have like an actual sermon. And the sermon when I was there, The sermon when I was there was actually decent. It was actually a decent sermon. Mm-hmm. And then they start doing this testimony time, and because he preached on the book of Job, and he actually pointed out something that I'd never seen in the book of Job, which is that Job makes a reference to the literal future resurrection of the body, which Mormons don't really believe in the same way we do. But it's still, it's there, and I thought that was really interesting. But the main thing they do is it's almost like this, like, I'm just reminding you guys, I believe this stuff. And that's what makes that song in the musical kind of interesting, because that is sort of the thing that makes Mormonism Mormonism in my mind. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
well, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I talked for like 5 minutes.
Well, now you made me forget what I was going to say. So say what you're going to say.
Well, now you've made me forget what I was going to say. So I'm going to have to make something up.
No, okay. So here's the thing is, I think, so this is a question about what is it, can a Mormon be, can you be a Mormon and be consistent rationally? Can you have a worldview that sustains this, you know, your belief, is it consistent with Mormonism? So here's what I think is the question. Is it consistent with Mormonism to believe in Mormonism? Or is it somehow self-defeating, or does it just sort of not have the resources it needs to be able to ground this claim to faith? Because as Christians, you know, as you know, Al Plantinga has so skillfully argued, that we can be entitled to believe in Christianity without having evidence, right? We can be warranted in our beliefs in a properly or basic way so that, you know, like, for example, you know, if we talk to our great-grandfather, he might say, well, look, we asked him, why do you believe in Christianity? He was like, well, he might say, well, you know, I was at church one day and they had an altar call and I just knew that it was true. And that might sound, at least on the surface of it, pretty similar to what a Mormon say when you ask them, why do you believe in Mormonism? And they say, well, I prayed, and I asked God whether it was true, and he told me it was true, and but so I believe that Mormonism is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of the weirdness of it is, you know, just, you know, if we can imagine a world where Christianity doesn't have the widespread influence that it does, even if it isn't, you know, necessarily accepted in mainstream culture, it still has, like for example, if I, you know, if I'm singing a song and I say, I believe that Noah built the ark and the world, entire world flooded and only him and his kids survived and everyone died, I mean, that sounds as silly as saying, well, maybe less silly than saying, you know, a few Jews got in some boats, came over to America. So I think that's the question that I spent a lot of time with is like, well, okay, is Mormonism the sort of worldview that could sustain the same sort of claim that Christianity can claim, which is we don't need to have evidence?
Well, yes, and that's the thing, though, is that Plantinga would never use his Reformed epistemology to persuade someone of the truth of Christianity. It's the question is whether or not if you come in the face of a defeater for which you have no overt defeater, are you rational in maintaining your belief? And there are beliefs that you have. Philip Quinn basically My senior thesis as an undergrad was on the discussion in the 80s between Quinn and Plantinga on this issue, and Quinn kind of concedes, not overtly exactly, but at least in principle, Quinn basically concedes it to Plantinga, because, like, who really has an answer to Hume? No one, really, except for Kant, which is what screwed up everything in the last, 200 years, because Kant thought Hume was right. He was, sorry for anyone listening to this, who has no idea what we're talking about now. Basically, Humean skepticism is strange and highly debated, but it seems like, at the end of the day, Hume didn't really think you could know almost anything, unless it was by direct perception. And so, like, behind, if you're not looking at something, if you don't have a direct perception of something, you don't really know anything about it. Like, behind me right now, there could be, like, a panda bear. And then I turn around, and there's no panda bear. And Hume's like, well, yeah, but maybe he's behind you right now. And it's like, well, I can't see what's behind me right now without turning. And he's like, I know, exactly. And so it's like, yeah, I don't really have a defeater. It's a lot more complicated than that, but
yeah, right.
I don't really have a defeater for Hume, except that it's obviously wrong. And unless it's, if it's, here's the thing, if he's right, then we have bigger problems.
Right.
So we have bigger problems than whether or not Hume is right or wrong. If Hume is right, then really nothing makes sense. And so Kant tries to solve that with his transcendentalism, and it just gets all crazy after that. But in any case, so, like, yeah, I get that, and I'm not expecting them to, based on my reasons. This is really good. This is a good discussion, because that's fair. I don't think that they're crazy, but I do think that in the public arena, you know, the free market of ideas, a lot of their ideas are very easy to ridicule. And if they expect me to buy into it, then they need to give me a reason to, you know? And I think that... What? Do you have to go?
Oh, I thought... My screen went off, and I thought I lost you there. Sorry.
No, you didn't lose me. I'll always be with you, John.
No. Okay, good.
Even to the end of the age.
You'll always feel like you're the panda bear standing behind me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, I mean, don't you think that, like, if there's not a good answer to something like, well, there were no Jews in North America, Terrell Givens is not a stupid guy. He's very smart. And he spends a lot of time trying to answer these objections. Clearly, he thinks that that is important because he has spent a lot of time trying to answer these objections, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why would he expect me to become Mormon? So anyway, I guess that's the thing, is they value that sort of existential leap kind of faith.
Uh-huh.
Way more highly than Christians do, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to think about it in terms of the larger of a scale. I think for me, what is it? I mean, this is the question. So this is the thing that drove me nuts. I mean, it really drove me crazy you can ask my wife. I mean, it was weird. I was like listening to, all day, every day, these ex-Mormons in particular talking about why they would leave Mormonism, Mormons, why they believe Mormonism. It's just really interesting. And I think, there's a lot of Mormons out there that do think that the evidence supports the claims. And they would think that there's, for example, they might say that there's, in the same way that Christians might say, well, where's the evidence for the Exodus? It's there, but it's I'm not saying this is the standard Christian answer, but I'm saying, you know, you might, you know, people we'd say, well, it's there, but it's being covered up because of political reasons, and it's against the status quo. It doesn't get.
Yeah.
And this is what we say about, Christians all over the place say about carbon dating and evolution and so forth.
Yeah.
So there's these, so I mean, I think to me that I have a lot of sympathy for the recalcitrants, right? Like against, the seemingly immense and unstoppable force of modern science and archaeology and so forth that would contradict Mormonism and the response to it. If Mormonism were true, let me back up one step here. So this is why I think I'm going to try to be as fair as I can to Mormonism and not necessarily go for whether or not I think that the miracle claims and the specific claims of the Book of Mormon are verifiable, but think about whether or not what they say about the way that they know that God exists is consistent with what they say about who God is, where we come from. Like, in other words, Plantinga, to make his idea work, that, you know, you could be you have warranted faith without evidence. He has to have the Christian worldview in place to have it work.
Right.
And the thing with Mormonism is that you don't have that. You don't have a God who made the human mind, made the world so that there would be this harmonious connection between them. You know, you have
really.
At least
say something more about that.
Okay,
I've never heard this.
So this is, and this goes again back to my point about how the Salt Lake Church has been a little bit misleading. But you know, to most people who are looking outside into Mormonism, you know, just a casual observer, they probably would say that Mormonism is monotheistic. And, they're Christians, except they think Jesus came over to America and, you know, Joseph translated some points. But it's very clear, and you know, from what Joseph Smith said and from what all of the early apostles said, that Mormonism is not monotheistic, it's polytheistic.
Right.
And in fact, God, the person that we call God, is essentially the same kind of thing that we are. There's no ontological difference between us and God.
Right.
God is just somebody who's farther along than we are in terms of our path to salvation and exaltation. And so God doesn't, make us. He doesn't create us.
That makes sense.
Right. And, and in fact, God himself we all have existed, according to the Mormon perspective, as intelligences, forever. We just are these, you know, that's how Joseph Smith thought of it. We all have existed forever. At a certain point in time, we organized into physical bodies. And all this is according to eternal natural laws that God didn't create. No one created them. They just exist. So there's not the kind of, there could be responses to this by Mormon scholars, but at least on the surface level, at least on the prima facie reading of it, right, you don't have the sort of rich theology that you would need in order to make a claim like, well, look, I prayed and I believe, and I'm warranted in that without evidence. Like, you don't have the kind of theology in Mormonism that, like, Plantinga has access to in a Christian perspective.
Yeah.
To say how that could be.
Yeah.
So my point, how would I argue against Mormonism? Of course, that depends on who you're talking to, but in terms, at a deep level, though, I think that Mormon theology and cosmology doesn't entitle them to make the claim that they could have belief in God without evidence. Because that would require the world in which God makes them to in such a way, makes the world such a way that these beliefs could be formed. You know the story of Plantinga's Count of Warrant. He doesn't have that.
Right.
It would just have to be a happy accident that, that the world is just the way that it is and human minds are just the way that they are. That when they operate a certain way, that they and they form this belief that God, that Mormonism is true, which is an interesting idea in itself. But how could the human mind be so designed that it would recognize that Mormonism specifically is true, that Joseph Smith is a prophet of God? That's that this particular person on this particular for this particular planet, who we know as God, is really God. It's not consistent with what they claim about ultimate reality, I think.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay, but I think I heard, that's really good, man. I think I heard a few years ago that a lot of the philosophical Mormons, like their actual philosophers, had started moving away from, I think it's better to qualify Mormon religion as henotheistic, because you have multiple gods, but they're dedicated to one.
Yeah.
And that's the one of this planet, right?
Well, so, you could say something like that, but the qualification, so, I mean, this is, I was making a lot more caveats earlier about some of the stuff I was saying, but, you just, this is pretty clear from what Joseph Smith said. So it could be henotheistic just in the sense that, we have a God that we like, and we have God that's specially related to us, but it's not henotheistic in the sense that the God that we worship is in principle, or is essentially, and I mean, in the terms of the sorts of properties he has and sort of thing that he is, he is exactly the same as you and me. And there's no...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So he has no... in fact, he works according to... he's bound by the natural laws and eternal laws just as we are. He might have some more insight into how the universe works than we do. But of course, Joseph Smith,
he's further along down the same road.
Right. And the other, and another point about this that's relevant to this epistemological concern is, in Doctrine of Covenants, it tells us that there's only one kind of, substance, and that's matter. So, Mormonism is a kind of materialism. Of course, they make this distinction they say there's two different kinds of matter, which I'm not sure what to make of that exactly. But the point is that that just furthers or deepens the trouble, right? If everything is material and it operates according to natural laws, which are not, decreed or made by God, but which God himself finds himself subject to, then how are we going to, how is God going to guarantee that we could be warranted in our belief in him?
So that must be, I don't know if Givens takes this point, but I had heard that their philosophical tradition was trying to, I don't know if reform is the right word, but they were definitely co-opting essentially Orthodox Christian theology on this point, so that there was, I don't know if it has to be our God, but that there was a God at the beginning of all of it. And that's more like Yahweh. And so is that right? Is it something that you've heard they've tried to change that to make it more coherent?
Yeah, there is. Well, I don't want to necessarily attribute motivation to it, but there has been a move among some Mormons. I mean, just the fact, for example, that if you ask a Mormon today, like a missionary comes to your house, and you were to say, well, how many, do you believe in one God, or are you polytheist? They wouldn't say they were polytheists. That's the way the church wants to represent itself, as monotheistic. There is certainly, I don't know how widespread it is, but I have heard the same thing, and I've seen that, want to move towards the more Orthodox Christianity and try to be more Christian, quote unquote. Yeah, I think that's right.
Because Terrell Givens loves C.S. Lewis. Like, he loves Lewis, and he tries to use some of his arguments and stuff.
Well, yeah, the thing is, like, if you see this polytheist, if you recognize that Joseph Smith was a polytheist, and that's what he taught, well, then all the arguments for theism are out the door. Moral argument, cosmological argument.
Yeah.
All that goes away too. So it's not actually the case that, Mormonism is theism plus Christianity plus, some extra stuff that Joseph Smith told us. It's completely different. And so the resources you have for showing that Christianity is true, aren't going to necessarily count for very much if you're trying to show that Mormonism is true.
Yeah. Well, and like even Givens, I don't remember which book this is in. I think I have four of his on Kindle, and I haven't finished any of them. I'm like halfway through three of them. But, they're pretty dense. But he talks about – oh, actually, this might be in his letter to a doubter, which I think you can buy for like $0 on Amazon. But I think he talks about the non exclusivity of the incarnation event. And he doesn't mean it in like a salvation sense. He means because of the nature of Jesus appearing and almost essentially being reincarnated in North America, that his incarnation, he viewed this as highly positive, and it made no sense to me why. Other than, like, maybe it's a good argument for believing in Mormonism. But he was really excited by the idea that because there was more than one incarnation event, and he's not claiming that it's a separate incarnation exactly, but that there you have the incarnation event in the Middle East, and then you have a secondary one in North America, that this means that this kind of thing is, oh, this is why he says this. It's because it lends more credibility to a plurality of Christian faiths, and the reconstitution event of Joseph Smith less strange. That was the whole point. Because that's my biggest problem theologically with the Book of Mormon itself, is that it clearly has no theology of God not giving up on his people. And because essentially the book ends with his people totally decimated. Like, they're done. And they have to wait. Does the last book... The last book is like 150 years after Jesus. Is that right?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
It's something like that. It's a pretty epic story. I mean, it's almost like the Lord of the Rings in some ways. The whole thing is, I was trying to explain this to my dad one time, because when I was spending a lot of time with missionaries, I found myself I guess I was doubting a little bit, like the non-legitimacy or the possibility of this stuff being true. And I was like, the thing is, if this was true, not the theological stuff that we just discussed, but like if this basic story is true, that, there was a group of Jews that were transported to North America, and then they had this whole other narrative in North America, and these books, are lost, and then they're found later, and this is the key to, restoring the church. I was like, that's a pretty epic story. Like, that's a good story in a lot of ways. I mean, you can make a a good film out of that. You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, the film that they show everyone is the most boring film ever made. But because they focus on, like, they focus,
you know,
so
great.
Much. What?
The HBO series. You know what would be, I would love to see this. HBO series on life of Joseph Smith.
I thought you were about to say on the actual Book of Mormon. Because, I mean, that would be like Game of Thrones. Stuff that goes on. Like, it's pretty crazy. It's a lot like the Old Testament. But,
it's almost like somebody copied it.
What?
Anyway, yeah. It's almost like somebody copied the biblical style and tried to make an epic narrative.
Well, and that's the other point, too, that I make, is it's really clear that the Book of Mormon is influenced by the King James Bible.
Oh, well, yeah, you know that the King James, there's errors in the King James Version.
That he recopies.
You know, yeah, he copies over, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a translation. I mean, it's pretty, well, I don't know. I don't know what it is, because I don't really know what happened. I don't think anyone knows exactly what happened.
Yeah, there's all kinds of really interesting theories about, how Joseph Smith got the text of the Book of Mormon, and all kinds of really interesting ideas about where his sources might be. It's, you know, go on YouTube and check it out. I mean, I don't know, I might be a nerd, but I think this kind of stuff is really interesting. But
I think it is too. What do you think happened? I mean, because I think it's kind of established the mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
I think is established, but I don't think that mechanism can produce what he wrote. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean, like that he was looking at a stone in the hat and he was, yeah. I don't know what happened. I mean, I think there's some interesting, and I don't recall the other information right now or all the details, but people have done language analysis and analysis on style and word use and stuff like that, and found some strong hits with some sources that were available prior to Joseph Smith publishing the Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for one thing that, you know, one claim that I've heard Mormons say, and I don't know how, you know, serious this is taken among, like, Mormon scholars or whatever, but that the fact that Joseph Smith wrote it in, what was it, a week or something like that, the whole Book of Mormon, is itself
that
a miraculous
is
thing. But the thing is that Joseph Smith, you know, his mother said that she was telling stories like this since he was a kid. So a lot of it may have been stuff that he, stories he made up, you know, and that he wrote down. Mm. Maybe he had other sources. I don't know. Nobody really knows, I think, exactly what happened.
But you know, the actual historical fact, I mean, it's relatively, like, attested to that he did what is claimed. Now, I'm not saying that that's how he came up with the text, but what I'm saying is it is pretty, I'm asking you, it is pretty well established. Like, there's multiple people involved in the room, right? Like, when he's doing this.
Yeah. Well, there's different, there are different situations at different times when he was translating it. And I think that, again, this is going back a couple of years for me from research, but there were times when it was just him and his scribe. There were other times when there was more people. There were times, I mean, and it was debated, like, whether anyone saw the plates during the translation. Or, of course, there's debate about whether anyone ever saw the plates ever. You know, people felt them and lifted them, they were covered. You know, and I know that there's, in the first part of the Book of Mormon, there's a testimony that people, saw the plates, but then there's you know, issues with that, that some people said that they saw them in a vision or something. All the, you know, every point of it is contested and debated and goes around and around. And that's one of the reasons why I think, for me, like, they, with Mormonism, it's hard, I don't know that the best way for, it's different, like I said, it's going to be different for different people in terms of, so I guess here's the question I'm thinking about, is why would somebody be a Mormon, and how would I try to convince a Mormon to see that it wasn't true, right? And I think that, to me, the really the strongest answer is, well, look, it's just that the worldview that it's proposing of polytheism just doesn't make sense. That's the ultimate, you know, defeater, because the miracle claims, you know, it's difficult to evaluate some of these things. And of course, with the Bible, even, you know, you don't necessarily, all these claims, all these points can go off on so many tangents, but there is plenty of historical evidence for the basic story of the Bible. You know, for example, they found David, the name of David, in the right time, right place.
Right.
You know, there's nothing like that at all for the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
But my point is that it's difficult to evaluate the miracle claims, especially if we're trying to be consistent, because, you know, we don't say, well, look, yeah, you know, there's no, at least in mainstream scholarship, the Exodus never happened. You know, according to mainstream scholarship, we don't think,
yeah,
oh, well, that's a problem. We don't think that's a problem. We shouldn't, that's a problem for Christianity. And I think that Mormons, you know, they have the same attitude about a lot of it. It's like, well, look, you don't have any evidence for the history of the Book of Mormon. Well, you know, that's why we turn our attention to Joseph Smith and what he did, and we pray about it, and we try to evaluate that. So,
yeah.
You know, I want to try to be as charitable as I can, even though it is easy to take pot shots. But at the same time, those could come back easily our way, I think, too. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
you know,
I guess I don't think it is as easy, actually, because it's not the things that I think they're, it's more, I get what you're saying, and it's actually really,
yeah,
it's really good, but there is a sense in which, like, so like Richard Dawkins will say, something like, you know, evolution is a fact. We need to stop calling evolution a theory. And
right,
evolution is just a fact. And it's like, okay, what do you mean by evolution? Like, clearly he means neo-Darwinian theory. Neo-Darwinian theory is highly contested. And Dawkins is only privy, really, to a small area of study in this.
Right.
Like Lamarckianism, and there's this whole teleological approach that's trying to create a new synthesis, I think is the phrase that they're calling it. So it's like, no, it's a theory. And when I say theory, I don't mean like it's not a confirmed theory. That's in science, a theory is a working hypothesis, and nothing stays a working hypothesis for this long without there being a whole bunch of people with a lot of evidence to confirm it, right? So it's,
yeah,
it's bigger than just that, but it's also not a fact. Because a fact is like an observable, uncontestable thing. Like when I was a security guard, you're told
on,
to observe
gotta,
and report.
Hold on 1 second. I got to be right back. I got to
okay.
Wait for 1 second. I'm sorry.
No, that's totally fine.
Okay, that's the end of the first half of this long discussion on Mormonism. And if you want to hear the second half, you gotta click on the next episode. Okay, there's no outro, so you can probably just go start that episode. now.
I don't know why I'm telling you all this. I want to hear about Mormon underwear.
Oh, yeah.